You are listening to the Glass Cannon Network, the premier source for role-playing game entertainment. Welcome to Cannon Fodder, a behind-the-scenes look at the Glass Cannon Network.
Yo! What is going on, everybody? Welcome back to Cannon Fodder. It is Wednesday, June 12th, 2024. My name is Joe O'Brien, and I'm here today with my co-host, Matthew Capitacasa.
And I'm Troy, sitting next to Skidmore LaValle.
Yeah.
He's right there.
I got a pin.
You're sitting next to Skidmore LaValle?
Skidmore LaValle.
Yeah. Did you guys finally tied the knot?
He decided to keep his name.
Is that hyphenated, or you just do like a middle name?
I thought like he was adopted me, like a Roman emperor.
I'm LaValle Marr.
LaValle Marr. Well, we are, as you can see, an in-studio FOD today. We got the crew together and decided, hey, why not hang out a little bit after one of our episode recordings, pop a couple nooners, and record a little Cannon Fodder, talk about the last week of Glass Cannon Podcast Campaign 2 / the last couple weeks, because, man, has a lot gone on, especially with my friend Matthew here.
This guy.
It's good to have you here, Matthew. How are you feeling today, buddy?
Oh, great. How are you feeling?
I feel fantastic. I've got a high noon in my hand. It's the summer. What's not to love? We got a great show for you today. A little bit of news. We're going to get right into the episode conversation. Tiny bit of We Are Stupid. And then, of course, listener mail.
We were only a tiny bit stupid this time?
There's actually no corrections. There are no corrections in We Are Stupid. It's more suggestions.
Wow.
Or thoughts about, you know, the game in general, which I love that Professor Eric offers from time to time. So let's talk about news. The only major thing that I have on my list today is the continuing news that is coming out about Gen Con and the Glass Cannon Network at Gen Con, all the stuff we got going on there. Troy has told you for several weeks now we got a lot of exciting shows coming. Well, now he has officially announced all of the casts for those shows. All of those posts have gone out. If you haven't seen it, because like me, you hate social media, Troy is here to tell you who the casts are if you want to grab a ticket if you haven't already. Troy.
I'm on my phone, which has 2% left, so, and it's dead.
Oh,
those are the casts.
These are going to be hard to remember.
I'm so mad. I don't think I can remember all of them, but
because there's so many people, I'm going to try to bring it up myself.
Well, my goal with this is to like use as many people as possible. We got a lot of people coming out. I wanted to do some pack casts because like Gen Con is expensive, and if we can like do a little extra to like give them some spending money to like defray the cost of their trip, I wanted to like pack as many people as possible. So we got Get in the Trunk Live on Thursday, day one, at the con, already sold out. One ticket became available last week, snatched right away. But that's going to be you running me, Skid, Sydney, Mary Lou, and Nora. I believe, yeah.
Through a Delta Green one shot.
And then, obviously, that night is Glass Cannon Live. It's going to be the old crew, the four of us with Cindy and Kate. And then, thank you, Matthew. Look at that.
I can't believe I just handed my Instagram to Troy LaValle.
Oh my God.
I had to download that onto my phone.
And now start liking some weird stuff. all right. So then the next day, Friday day, at the con, Call of Cthulhu Live, it's me running Ross Bryant, Paula Deming, Nora Ibrahim, Rob Kirkovich, Jared Logan, Skid Marr, and Seth Skorkowski through an original adventure written by Scott Dorwood.
Oh my God.
I don't think I mentioned that.
What is the math? Is that seven players?
Seven players, yeah.
I'm just waiting for that combination of people on stage.
I'm so excited about that. That is going to be so insane. It's just so cool, like seeing these people that you almost exclusively work with, like over a computer network.
Right.
Seeing them in person, but seeing all those people together and like getting to play with them in person is just, that is a dream come true.
That's awesome.
They gave us the biggest room for that one. That's a 700 seat room. So I was like, I need a person for every 100 people. Yeah. plenty of tickets left for that. I mean, if we sell that out, that would be phenomenal, but let's pack a lot of people in there.
That would be groundbreaking, record breaking for the Glass Cannon.
For the Glass Cannon, yeah.
Never sold that many tickets.
And for Gen Con.
Yeah, for Gen Con. And for the world. But I mean, that's another reason I put so many people on there, just like get a lot of different fandoms in there. I mean, it would be wonderful. I don't know. A lot of people have been asking, oh, I hope the Glass Cannon tapes and releases these. We have no control over the Gen Con shows. Some of them are streamed to the Gen Con channel, but we will not be taping them. We will not be releasing audio.
Yeah, because when you sign up to do that, correct me if I'm wrong, Trey, if you know anything else, but my understanding of it is like, what you do at Gen Con is owned by Gen Con.
Yep.
You know, in terms of performance. And so they have the lockdown on all that media. But, you know, it should be out there. At least some of them will.
Yeah, I would think a 700-seat room is probably going to be a streaming room, but don't hold me to it. I needed Matthew's face. It didn't recognize mine. I'll do this quick. And then by the way, that's going to be 1920s Call of Cthulhu, original scenario written by Scott Dorward. I've been a fan of Scott since I ran my first ever Call of Cthulhu game. So I just reached
that
out
Matthew
to him.
Matthew and I played in.
Yeah. I just reached out to him and be like, hey, I'm a fan. He's like, I'm a fan of you guys.
Was that the one we did with Becca and Nora?
Yeah. Yeah. Bleak Crossbow. Oh, he also wrote, if he wasn't the only writer, he's certainly the head writer on the Peru chapter of Mask of Nyarlathotep.
I mean, he's written
some amazing stuff. And so he's going to write an original. Wait till you hear the concept for this.
I am so excited for that. I saw this because, you know, we didn't hear until you posted anyway. It was just like, this is so fucking cool.
I'm going to sit you right next to it. I'm going to have Seth Skorkowski on one side and Jared Logan on the other side.
Oh, my God.
And then that night, just like we did last year, this year we're going to do modern Call of Cthulhu live at the Athenaeum. This is a Glass Cannon show that will be recorded. We will release the video and audio later. And it's all of us along with Kate, Nora, Ross and Rob Kirkovich. So the cast of Time for Chaos and the founders in a modern Call of Cthulhu.
Oh my God, amazing.
And we are close to selling the most tickets we've ever sold to a live show
for that one.
Yeah, there's only like 50 tickets left. And that theater is like ancient. It's very strange, weird.
Oh, that's the one we did last year.
Yeah, it feels like a dinner theater. And I mean, that's going to be wild. I don't even know what the hell I'm going to run, but I have some ideas. Two more very quickly. We got Blades in the Dark Live. The Busted Mufflers are back. On Saturday at the con, Jared is going to be running Joe, Mary Lou, myself, Rob Kirkovich, Ross Bryant, and Sydney through some sort of crazy heist. And then we finish off our performances with Starfinder playtest, Starfinder 2E live, where I'm going to run the Glass Cannon live crew along with Paula Deming through something wild in space.
Also Glass Cannon live.
I think I said that.
It's Thursday night. Right?
It's sold out. It's already sold out. Sorry.
Yeah. So what's the point in even mentioning it?
Yeah. You had your chance.
Very excited. Yeah. Also very nervous. It's going to be a really fun time, but we'll obviously have more to talk about that as we get closer. Let's get into this week's episode of the Glass Cannon Podcast. And actually the last couple weeks, I'm going to kick it off with you, Matthew, because we have not heard from you, or the Nation has not at least directly heard from you after the events that have unfolded with the snail encounter in the river and the impending waterfall. The way that it all came about was, at least for me sitting in the chair right next to you, extremely unexpected and surprising, where we, you know, really believe that Ramius could be the one who goes down, and then all of a sudden it twists and turns. Talk to us about how you felt about it at the time, and, you know, what you're feeling now weeks later as you evolve into a new character.
I mean, it was a bummer. It was crushing.
Yeah.
It's always crushing when it's one of those random encounter things too, right? Where it's...
Yeah, it doesn't feel like
ignominious.
A milestone encounter, yeah.
But at the same time, it feels more realistic.
Totally.
I've made this point before. Like the first time I watched The Hurt Locker, you know, the thing I really took away from that is like, at war, you know, anyone can die at any given moment and it won't necessarily be in the heat of battle.
You don't have to be killed by Saddam.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, you can't just kill by anything.
It's like, that's the horror of it, right? Like, you're living under...
I like, oh, man.
Never thought of it that way.
The boss battle, I just, right at the end,
that's the true horror of it, right? It's like, at any moment, like, you could just die.
Right.
And I think that fell. And that also was a natural one. Like, what am I going to argue about?
Yeah.
I know. When the dice just tell you that, you know,
you're cheating?
They write your
fate. Can't really argue about that.
No, that's
the dice putting their, like, hand on your shoulder. I mean, like, come on.
It's time.
I would say thing with Sydney was the same kind of thing. You
know? Yeah, it was the exact same thing.
Yeah.
Exact same thing. Like, so both of these deaths occur on, wouldn't have to be a death roll if it wasn't a natural one, and both on a natural one.
Boom, sus.
Yeah.
That's why all of my characters on the Glass Cannon Network going forward will have the Die Hard
feature. Yeah, man.
Die Hard, love Die Hard. Dying Five.
Without, not to put you on the spot, but without a stimulated Bottle Cap Economy, you gotta take Die Hard.
Yeah, well, I was thinking about it recently, and the reason that Die Hard is so great, like I was like, oh, it's great. But now the reason it's so great is because it makes that one major, 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 major difference, which is you avoid death after you were completely fine, and then you get crit and then natural one, which can totally happen.
Yeah.
And 100%. It allows that to not happen. So I was like, you know, what's one more of your dying condition going to do? Because if you're going to die, like if you're that close, you're probably going to die. It prevents that. That cannot happen to you, which is essentially what happened to you.
It guarantees you at least two rounds.
At least two times you'll roll recovery checks.
Right. Also, it doesn't have to be a crit because in especially at low levels in 2E, like you go down and come up a lot. So if you're wounded one, you know.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, keep in mind, Die Hard is not a Christmas feat.
What does that mean?
I can't joke about Die Hard as a Christmas
Yes. Very good.
The Nexus kid,
I think it is a Christmas feat.
I think it is a Christmas feat as well.
I also think it's a Christmas feat.
Most people disagree.
Most people do disagree.
Shane Black mostly does Christmas feats.
Does Christmas feats. All right. Well, then, obviously, did you have any concept of what would become Barnes before Talitha went down? Did you have a backup character in mind?
I had a backup character that I just couldn't use.
Really? Why?
Well, because of where we were. It just didn't
make any... It's a magical fantasy land.
Didn't make any... He was connected to...
Oh, was it him? Did you hear that?
Don't worry. You'll have time.
not if we continue to die where we are.
Hip pocket that fella.
So it just didn't make... It didn't make any sense. And like as soon as we land, we went through that gate, I was like, oh, like...
Yeah. Like, I'm in a completely unknown place.
I said, I better start thinking about a backup character. And then by the time... And then it was like two episodes later... Talitha was dead. So, Troy was like, I think we even canceled another recording because we were like, we were going to do that day.
Mentioned it, yeah.
And I was like, I can't. Because we've done, you were very kind about it, but like, we've been in a situation before where I had to like come up with a character on the spot. And sometimes it yields great results, like Atticus.
Atticus. Yeah,
I feel like you would have been like, you had been wishing to play an Atticus when you came up with Atticus on stage.
Yeah, there was a base for Atticus before that show, but like, that really kicked it into gear for sure.
Yeah, and I was like, I don't want, like, I'm going to live with this character. I don't want to rush into it. And Skip was like, no, take your time. So we canceled the recording so I could think about it. And then Barnes came though. Yeah.
And so far, very interesting. I think you've been a little bit frustrated with the opening performance of Barnes in combat, which has been a little embarrassing.
I mean, he went toe-to-toe with that monster while you all handled the other one.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's true. But it's always frustrating to bust out a new character for the first time and just like shit the bed on the rolls.
Well, you solved the problem in our Jade Region campaign where you managed to build a character that would probably never hit. But Troy could never hit.
Yeah,
never hit
him. Not even God himself. Not even God. Like, fight defensively every single round.
And your AC by the end was like 34. It was unhittable. Yeah.
I wish I could make that in 2E. But
natural 20s missed often.
Yes. Yeah. This guy. It's true. And I had, and then it was just built in such a way that I couldn't really hit unless I crit.
But if you crit, you had that talking sword.
Yeah. It was awesome.
Yeah. Short of that, what are you going to do?
Yeah, but it's very interesting so far. Where does this concept come from? The concept of the teacher.
I mean, I'm a teacher. It was like you're drawing. Obviously, I'm not like venturing.
So you're saying that Barnes reminds you of you? You're saying?
No, actually, not at all. He's like the original concept was like, well, we're in this land where we don't know where we are. It's I from moment one. I mean, it's a good call. We're like we're on Castroville, but like it seemed that way. But you know. I was like, okay, what if we had like an Indiana Jones type character?
I mean, he's like sort of a Indiana Jones crossed with Van Helsing.
Yeah, exactly. I was the thaumaturge is a very
Van Helsing yeah. like kind of concept.
Yeah. And I was like, well, what if we take that and make him an Indiana Jones? And then I was thinking too about, it'll come to me. My mind is going blank right now. But A.E. Houseman, the poet A.E. Houseman. He flunked out of Oxford.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But then he just was writing and was writing both poetry and scholarly articles. And he became such an eminent scholar outside of the academy. They eventually had to like offer him a position at Oxford, even though he had no degree. Huh. So it was like that. Like that was the idea of Barnes, that he had such kind of wide.
So accomplished in the field.
Yeah.
Like and practical experience.
He'd been out in the field so much. He knew so much. It would be embarrassing if they didn't have him on the anthropology staff.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great.
Yeah. It's a very cool concept. I look forward to getting to know him better, but let's get into this week's episode where
saying, according to Hubert, he's got a pretty solid piece.
Yeah. I mean, let's not brother tripod here.
Hubert being the arbiter of all things.
Yeah, he has no experience with anything.
They all look big to him.
Yeah.
Right. Well, I liked the idea that Hubert uses it always as just like a cheap method to win friends and influence. Yeah. So he's just always say like, hey, that's a great penis.
Who's not going to like a guy? That
he's not going to like a guy.
I don't know. In the context that Hubert does it, it's a little off. Yeah,
it's a little off. Yeah, let's talk about Hubert. So we are looking at this potential encounter that Barnes gives us a little bit of heads up on about these construct-y creatures that are protecting the vernacular. We're not sure. We get up there, and Zephyr's suggestion is we do a little surveilling, right? And like, yes, excellent. So we just sit there for like hours and watch and watch. And then we see the flow of this thing and then start coming up with a plan to avoid the encounter. Troy, talk me through like what's going through your head as we're all talking our way around an encounter that you have prepared. What were your thoughts as the GM in that situation?
My thoughts were like, wow, this map sucks. This was not the like goal of the map, but like I couldn't like fudge the map at that point. I'm like, well, no, actually that gap is 15 feet. So everybody's going to roll. I'm like, fuck, that's the map. I wish I had like just noticed it. I didn't even pick it up. But at the same time, like, I think that certainly in the past, like I tend to be a stickler for what's written because it's just easier to follow that and not have to worry about it and then improvise from there.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to, over the years, be a little more loose with like, you know, if you've got a cool idea, why stymie your creativity? Let's see what we can do with it. And I could tell this is what you guys wanted to do. You desperately needed a W. So I'm like, all right, well, let's see what happens. And there was still good risk there. And that's what I wanted. I didn't want it to be automatic. I just wanted there to be us all to understand that like, all right, well, there's a little bit of risk here. And the risk is pretty bad. If one of them falls, they're going to fall down. Then everybody's going to jump down and it's a fight. Like there's no way around that. So there was enough risk that I was happy with the fact that you guys succeeded. And, you know, the AP is written in such a way where, like, it takes into account you skipping encounters.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. Well, we'll get to that in a second, too. I want to talk about APs and listener mail. But this concept of, you know, getting around some of them and having that worked in, like how do you know that? Is it writing in the pre-written AP? Is it saying, like, here's a way around this encounter if the PCs figure it out?
I don't want to say too much, but I will say that, like, there's a whole... how do I want to word this without giving too much away? There's basically a whole paragraph before you get to this, after you, I'm trying to make sure because we've recorded ahead. Basically, once you arrive through the gate, they describe like the next X amount of encounters and they give you some sort of freedom in how you can, they suggest taking some creative liberties with, here's what we think is the suggested pattern, but you do whatever you want.
Yeah.
And, you know, sort of contingency plans for if the PCs do this instead of this, this instead of this. And so I just kind of worked out in advance what I was thinking. And then in listening to you guys, we are where we are.
We are where we are, which is a leap onto this vernacular, onto this cargo, John. Yeah. And we start going. And now we're in, cool moment, right? Was there a cool moment? No. Was there, it's just, no. No. This is the one where it's
Asta
like an
and
hour.
Zephyr have a situation.
Do they have a situation?
Yeah, I think
okay,
that's
yeah,
in
I couldn't
app.
Remember. An hour into this thing, we are attacked by these creatures. And
of course we are.
It comes out, yeah, exactly. And I was like, this is preposterous. Like right after you're like, so an hour later, this is just so funny to me. You look down, you notice that the ridges around this thing are about 1 foot high. I was like, no, no. And then you're like, you hear these screeching in the distance. And, you know, I'm just thinking, this is a joke. Like it can't be. There's no way. Like there's no protection. There's no way. And then sure enough, a flying creature encounter swoops down on us and I think just one of the most amazing endings of an episode we've had lately. I mean, the highs and the lows, because when Kate is like, I think it's Kate, it's like, put Hubert on that list of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. He's like, all right, and 6. And then you roll the natural 6, gonna attack Hubert, wham, hits him. And then you're like, and now I have to roll an athletics check. This is a free action?
It's an athletics check against Hubert's fortitude DC. It is a free action that I can do.
If you hit.
If I hit, yeah, on a hit, I can do this as a free action. That's the trigger.
And then you roll a natural 20.
Mm-hmm.
And that results in Hubert being flung off the thing.
I mean, it's just, I've never wanted to fudge dice. Then go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Sick, not Hubert, because I wasn't going to really include him until Kate said that, and then I rolled a 6 and then nat 20 on that, because it's not a given that I will just throw someone off. So it's pretty amazing. And to see you guys go through that emotion swing of like, yeah, no,
yeah,
no,
I was like, wait, that was too much.
I just wanted to maroon him on a space where he would never be found by other life.
Here's my emotional journey since that recording. I have been, I felt guilty for a little bit there because I definitely was vocal, on Cannon Fodder included, about how desperately I wanted Hubert to die. Then it happened, and I was like, maybe like I overdid it a little bit. And so I felt guilt, and then I came around to like, there's no way Troy lets this happen. Like, there's no way he's going to die. He will hit the canopy, fall through several layers of soft palms or something, land on a cushion of fallen leaves.
Of lichen, yeah.
And then, yeah. Of lichen, exactly. And then we're going to find him, like, later in this adventure. He's just going to show up. Oh, anyway, that's my prediction.
What I imagine is he's going to, like, bounce conveniently his way down, but disappear, and then we'll, like, come to the court of the king, and then sitting beside him in a place of honor will be Hubert Hedge.
No, that's why I picture him as like C-3PO. Like, the next time we see him, he's like the god of like this like tribe of jungle apes or something.
That's amazing. You know? Yeah, so I think we're all in the same headspace here, but we'll have to see how it goes. Other than that, though, there is this, you know, this TPK fear, which just like lies in front of you. Cause like, once again, falling damage, it's a killer. I don't really understand the encounter design that much, but we'll see what happens.
I've been trying to work out in my head if I could use the Barnes's mirror ability to like, he falls, like every round I fall, I then go up 15 more feet and then fall, and like I can slowly kind of like work my way down to eventually where I can just teleport to the ground.
You just like fall 50, yeah. Do you have the same momentum when reappear?
But if I go back up and then try to like swim up, I don't know.
Yeah, that's like the last like Futurama episode before the new Hulu episodes, was something like that. Like Fry, he falls off a building, and he has a device that can send him back like 15 seconds through time, but that's a 15 second cooldown. And so to save his life, he has to keep going back up to just after he fell. And so he's caught in this loop for eternity where he just like keeps the exact same thing.
Yeah. All right, let's get into a little We Are Stupid before we do some listener mail.
We are stupid.
Ladies and gentlemen, Nick Lowe. Awesome having some skid drops on this FOD. We are no major We Are Stupids here, except, you know, one thing that kind of goes back in episode. I think we talked about this last week, but the creature's poison that you started the episode with, what you just missed a line in like the stat block or whatever, and it said that poison is counteracted by any magical healing, which like we didn't know at the time. Okay. So we were going through like all the poison stuff, and I don't regret it for a second. It was so funny. No,
I'm glad we didn't know.
Yeah, me too. I'm so glad we didn't know.
I mean, is this, maybe this is just like convenient thinking, but like I always feel like when I'm running monsters, if I miss a thing like that, I'm like, well, my monster doesn't have that.
No, I mean, yeah, totally.
You know, that's how I think.
They're not all identical.
Yeah, right. Because like, it's silly to be like, oh well, none of that happened.
Oh yeah, no, you can't go back and rewrite history. Yeah. But
I would like to catch that beforehand. But if I don't, it's like, well, my monster doesn't.
Yeah, it's fine.
I mean, I'll take that scene any day of the week over him just being fine. Like, yeah. The fact that we're all around him, like doing CPR, shoving potions into his face.
It was a great bonding moment, though. It was. He's the new guy, and he put himself bravely out there in front of one of these things. Went down, and you're all like trying
to
save
like
his life, and so it attaches him to you. It attaches you to him. It was cool.
I think that's one of the bigger things that like I try to think about in my games, is like when you make a mistake as a GM or as a player, a rule mistake, or you misread something and time has passed already, that rule does not counteract the reality. The reality wins. It wins out all the time. So like, that's just what happened. The fact that it happened by mistake, do you know how many things happen in life by mistake?
Yeah.
How many inventions occur by pure accident? Like, these things happen by accident, but they're real and they are important, and you should not just erase them.
Absolutely.
And they totally have value. Mistakes happen for a reason.
You know,
as my mom would say.
But if I had died, would you feel the same way?
Yes. If we didn't catch it at the time, I'd feel bad. I'd feel terrible. But like, it's an honest mistake, right? Like, if it's,
What if I had died and then Troy was like reading back the rules? Like, oh, did you heal him magically? Like, then we probably would have read.
Probably just because it's
like
a character
death. I don't like
asterisk
thinking because it's such a slippery slope when you start throwing in asterisk. I remember like all my years of doing theater, they would say like, if you mess up on stage, if you mess up a line or you miss a cue, you miss that. I was always taught like, that's a gift. When that happens, that's a gift. It's an opportunity to be like, all right, well, I'm living in the moment now. What am I going to do with this? And so that's what I think whenever we make mistakes. I know some people, the purists, don't enjoy that part of the game, but I think of it as a gift. Like, obviously, it would suck if you died from that, and then you feel like, come on, can we retcon it? But
it's like complaining about the tuck rule game for Tom Brady.
Right, it's not. It's
like, it doesn't do anything.
Like, it doesn't. The game was over. The Patriots won, and they went on to win 14 Super Bowls. It's just like, okay, maybe they should have said something different at the time, but they didn't, and that's what happened.
Yeah, it's an opportunity to do something new and learn at the same time.
Anyway, I felt like it was Professor Eric's duty. Yeah, I'm sure he did as well, to point out that this was incorrect by the book. But we're kind of fine with how it all played out. He said, as a tip, because of the argument we had with Sydney, which is just one of my favorite. We have had plenty of arguments with Sydney. This takes the cake for me lately as one of my absolute favorite, where she's like, I want to use the healing potion. I'm like, that won't do anything. Don't worry about it. And then we realize, wait a minute, every hit point matters because he could not go because he's wounded. So like, we got to keep him up above zero. So yeah, let's use healing potion. Use healing potion. Then we read it, and the bonus is +1. +1? Is it 1d6 +1? Then Troy reads
this.
And he's like, "All right, it says it's it gives you a +1 to saves, fortitude saves against poison." We're like, "Oh, holy shit, amazing!" Well, that's just phenomenal. And then she rolls a d6. One. Oh god, that potion sucked. And I rolled minimum healing on my heal spell.
Right.
So you got a total of 10 points of healing out of my heal and the potion. So now we're like, he still could go down and could still die anyway, even after using that. You realize that Buggles has a potion, an antidote.
Yeah.
This gives a +4 bonus. Sydney's like, well, if there's that, that's a +4 bonus. You shouldn't use my potion.
Right.
And I'm like, it's like, we just used your potion. She's like, I never would have used my potion if we knew that that didn't stack.
So let's rewind a second. When she says that, I was like, I kind of felt bad. I'm like, yeah, if she knew about that, right. I'm like, all right. And you're like, no, you're not allowed to do that. I'm like, well, my hands are a little tip-tied. But then she's like, no, the only reason I did it
that's
is because
why
the +1. I was like, in that moment, I was like, she's a liar. And like,
I know.
She said it with such
she knew what she was doing.
I mean, but her face, I was like, oh my God, she's probably lied to all of us several times.
We would know.
If you watch that back, the way she's like, no, the only reason I did it was because I'm like, well, a second ago, you had no idea what that +1 was. And the confidence with which she lied. I was like, I will never trust anything she said.
She did. And then she was just like, well, I read and I did my homework. I did good. Like, and she's so good. I lied well. What, are you going to complain to me for that? Anyway, that was so goddamn funny.
That was so funny.
So,
but then it came up and it was just like, well, that's something else we needed. And it's just like, well, we could use this. Like, well, just use the potion.
Yeah, yeah. She was like, so, and I was like, all right, fine. Take it back.
Yeah.
Can you give him that potion? Because he needs some healing. And then we sort of all saw how ridiculous it would be to undo that potion.
Yeah, to undo it and then just do it.
Yeah, roll it again now. See if you get better than one.
Yeah, just basically, using a bottle cap on a potion. Anyway, that was so goddamn funny. And Professor Eric wanted to point out, and this is good. This is just a tip for maybe newer players out there like us. When you're interpreting any items, there's a lot of items out there that have minor, lesser, moderate, greater, whatever down the line. For any item that has that, the best thing to do is immediately just go to the top group discussion of the item first before you read what the other ones do, because those are very abbreviated and don't give you details. Whereas the top one, as Professor Eric points it out here, says, upon drinking this elixir, you gain the listed number of hit points and gain an item bonus to saving throws against diseases and poisons for 10 minutes. It says that at the top, but doesn't say what the bonus is. Then you look at the specifics.
So whenever I have to prep it, like an alchemist, and this has happened in Strange Aeons, the Darrows that you fought, there was some Darrow alchemists. I've got to make a cheat sheet for myself of all the different lesser alchemist fires, moderate, blah, blah, blahs. And so I've got to look, and each one will tell you, like, and you probably know this even better than I do, like a moderate alchemist fire is like X amount of damage plus this, and then they're burning 2 or whatever. But at the top, it tells you that like all alchemist fires do X amount of damage, but that's not in each individual thing. thing. So I come across this all the time when I'm like prepping bombs and shit for my enemies.
Yeah.
The thing that always kills me in the moment, like not in the moment, I get it, but the... the order of lesser to minor, like lesser to minor to minor, like what's the lowest? Like in the moment, I'm like in the like the white hot, the white heat of like trying to do the encounter. I'm like, all right, what's the lowest one? Yeah. It's like, where, what's the ladder?
It's like trying to order like a latte at Starbucks while you're being shot at.
Shoot me.
With soy.
Professor Eric also wants to point out there's been a lot of commenting from the Naish about how this feels in general like a low loot campaign. And he wanted to point out that he believes that we have missed a lot of loot.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Really?
He's like, I wouldn't think too much about the writing of the campaign. He's like, they're missing stuff, including things, he says, that have been obviously telegraphed by Troy that players completely miss. So just FYI. Keep your eyes.
You haven't missed a ton, but I mean, I do. I throw it out there. I'm like, I didn't.
Yeah, you are not trying to like. Yeah, he's like, Troy's basically telling you this stuff to look for this stuff.
When a time's gonna come when I can tell you one specifically and be like, how the fuck did we miss that?
That'll be great.
We just went through. We're a little bit ahead, but we just recorded. We went through loot we had and see just to see like what the value of everything was. It wasn't as terrible as it felt. We lost a bunch with all the stuff with Talitha getting washed away. But the
that's brutal.
Because there was some, she had some stuff on there that would have been
brutal and really cool. No offense, but just extremely rare to like have a PC death where you cannot recover the body or anything they had. Narratively.
Like
that does not happen. Legendary artifact. And you got to go back. Or you don't.
Well, we said it. What if it was Kate and she had the key? Like you got to go back. So
I wish I could say I was thinking about that when I saved Zephyr's life, but. Maybe I just saved her out of the goodness.
Save the key.
Square. You cannot die.
The key. That's one of the best possible loot drops you can have is a dead PC.
That's a good one. It's a good one. Let's get into a little listener mail before we call it a day.
It's time for listener mail.
Andreas from Copenhagen. Copenhagen. Is that Denmark?
That's Denmark.
Denmark. Writes in with a very nice long message. The question at the end had to do about catching up on everything and then listening to the last week's FOD. It seems from the way I've heard you talk about it on the FOD that you guys are always playing APs. What are the reasons that you guys always play APs? Is it to cut down on prep time or so is more time to run a business? Is it because of your relationship with Paizo? Is there any other reason why you tend to go this way instead of homebrews as the way you run shows on the network? We've answered this before, but not in a long time.
Yeah, I mean, we experimented with some short form content in the form of disorganized play because that sort of mimicked what we were doing back in the before times when the business was still like one or two podcasts and we were still playing like a game night where Skid would run us through some Pathfinder Society scenarios or you and I would run. Matthew, I think, ran one. At the end of the day, we just found that you get more legs out of a longer story. Now, when we decided to do Gatewalkers, we knew out the gate we didn't want to do another six-book AP for several reasons, one of which, though, being that we felt like somewhere between 100 and 200 episodes was going to be better than 300-something for what we're trying to build right now over the next 5-10 years. But at the end of the day, we just think that people attach themselves to the story and the characters more when it's a longer story. I mean, that's the main reason that I turned the tour into an AP, because I just felt in those early little live shows that we did, they were great, but there were the stakes weren't as high. You know, if everybody died at the end, it's like, okay, cool. Mm-hmm. You know, they died.
Well, I think the spirit of the question is more why APs and not homebrew.
Oh, why APs and not homebrew?
That's, I think, the spirit of the question is, why do you run pre-written stuff so much? We always have.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just feel
like haven't been much of a homebrew crew.
The reason I think is like there are professionals that do this and they do it really well. It's not to say that that's not not something we could do, but like, let's play to our strengths. Let's play to our skill sets. There are pros that are game developers and game writers. Let's let them do that work until we can hire staff that do that. And we do our work of running and being entertainers. For me, it just seemed like a better option. But we, all of us in, you know, put so much homebrew. I mean, Traveler is probably the first pure homebrew show on the network.
Long form homebrew series
on the network. So, you know, we're not afraid to jump into that territory. And obviously we have a professional writer doing that at the helm. But
I've homebrewed Alien. All the Alien stuff I've run is homebrew. Yeah. But that, you know, large, I would run a pre-written if they had them in that way. Yeah. Like their pre-written scenarios have pre-generated characters and existing plot lines that you play in. I'm sure it's very fun, but that is not our style. We love making our characters. I'm happy to put them into an adventure written by someone else where we bring the protagonists. But failing that, I'll just homebrew so that we can play our own characters, you know?
I also feel like I've talked to a lot of people when we're out on tour that our GMs usually and like listening to us run through an adventure.
Our take.
Yeah. And then even if they're ahead of us or they're behind or they're like, oh, I was thinking about running Strange Aeons, but then they listen to us do it. Like, so either way, it can be another resource for that kind of. And then I think then I've talked to people who were players who are like, oh, I played Rise of the Rune Lords and I'm enjoying listening to you on Legacy because you're doing something completely different, or like you fell for that trap that we avoided, or you know, it's just kind of a fun alternate history.
I think that's a fun other layer for an audience. I know you've been frustrated by it at times, though, because you know, I wish we had homebrew so that people couldn't like kind of know what's coming or write on the board like, oh, they don't do it that way, blah, we shouldn't do it that way, blah, blah, blah. Like the thing with the spell and the counteracting poison.
Yeah,
it's like there's almost like a double check on you out there because you're running something pre-written.
Yeah, it's one of the main reasons why I wanted to move away from it for the flagship show. Because I don't want people to be fully surprised. Yeah. I don't mind so much being like, oh, yeah, that's not right. It's more of like the surprise. The fact that anyone can just read all of Gatewalkers right now is kind of a bummer to me. You can't do that with you know, traditional media that isn't based on a pre-written work. So I don't know how much longer I'll tread in that territory.
But it also plays to like Paizo's strengths. Like they've always been great at writing these things. Yes. I mean, even before Pathfinder came along, and especially it's contrasted with Dungeons and Dragons, which doesn't have a great reputation for like some of these longer form campaigns, you know, in modern, you know, recently, they've always been great at it. Like this is the thing that they're really good at. And so it's nice to be able to take advantage of that.
Yeah.
You know,
did you see the thing that D&D just released or is about to release? It's called something, the blah, blah, blah staircase or something. And it's a re-release of a bunch of original D&D adventures converted to 5e.
Yes.
The one that I really jumped out at me was Expedition to the Barrier Peaks.
Oh, no way.
Yeah. And they
did
this a while back with some other ones. Like I know they've updated the
Strahd.
I know they did.
But what's the temple we did? Tomb of Horrors they've done, but like but Expedition of the Barrier Peaks is going to be like, it just came out. It's brand new. And then a couple other ones that I wasn't as familiar with. But.
Okay. Well, I definitely
like, we were talking.
Well, I think that was also, I mean, look, there has a lot of nostalgia for us, but I've also heard a lot of grumbling from that in the community, the people that are into D&D.
Yeah, I mean, if
like
we were to go back.
They're just rehashing old stuff. Like, can't you write new stuff? I mean, it feels like Paizo is constantly generating original content that is mind-blowingly detailed and long.
Yeah, and it like contributes to the greater story of the world.
Yeah,
their world. Like if that's something you're into, you can dip into like, oh, there's all of this lore. And if you're not, you can just run your AP.
And I love those old modules, but like the style of adventures, like written adventures, has changed a lot since the day, like the 80s when those came out. It really was just sort of like encounter. And a lot of times like the adventure itself didn't formed a cohesive whole. So like
you're talking
very little narration, like very little sort of, you know, prose in it or whatever.
Yeah. Was it our lighting designer at Kansas City was running like six games, he told us after the show, and one of them was Curse of Strahd, and we mentioned that. We're like, oh yeah. And I was like, oh yeah. And he was like, you'd be surprised, it wouldn't feel as exciting to you as you'd think, right? Because it feels so old fashioned now.
Right.
Yeah. He's like, there's a lot of fun to it. Austin. It was one of the shows.
Yeah, I remember we were like waiting for our Ubers and
we were chatting them up. Yeah. It was cool. Yeah. It's cool what you say, Skid. I think you hit the nail on the head there. And Troy, you said earlier, like there are professional writers that do this. We love the performance aspect and just rolling dice playing the game. So why don't we let them focus on that? We'll focus on this. It's also a good point, Skid, as you added to that, is that like, I don't know if many people know this, but this is the way I was introduced to it. And this is the way I've seen it develop over the years is that Paizo's strength is the APs and the world building. You know, like they based so much of their original system off of the OGL, and they just kind of like had that going for a while. So yes, there were tons of game design elements, but really so much of their focus was on the story.
That's content. What drew me to it initially.
Yeah.
Was that. It was just like, I heard that there was that the like Rise of the Rune Lords. It's just like, this is incredible. And that was what drew me to Pathfinder at all, like yeah. in the beginning. So
I remember listening to Eric Mona talk about the APs when they weren't in every issue of the magazine back before Pathfinder. And he like somebody wrote in and was like, I only buy the issues of the magazine that have APs.
Yeah.
And he was like, well, then let's put an AP in every issue. It was like, and it just began to grow out from there. And I was
It's so cool. Yeah. It's so cool. Well, that's going to wrap it up for us this week, guys. Thank you so much to Matthew and Skid for hanging out in Stewed for a little while, chilling with us. That's awesome. We've got what coming up? We've got, oh my God, today. I'm streaming again. We're doing minis again today, Wednesday.
Oh.
We're doing minis at 2:00 Eastern. So if you happen to be listening to this early in the day at 2:00 Eastern, Skid and Matthew and I, Troy might stop by.
We'll see.
Well, Troy might stop by. We're gonna make some more minis. Try to finish it out. We've only got a few left, and some GCN iconic characters we're gonna try to make. So that would be really, really awesome if you guys can make that.
St. Paul Show Friday night on YouTube.
St. Paul Show Friday night on YouTube. Glass Cannon Podcast continues on Thursday night on YouTube at 8:00 Eastern.
Oh, it's a good one too.
Oh my God, it's so good. So anyway, fun stuff coming. Take it easy, everybody. Have a good one, and we'll see you next time. Bye.
Sydney's mic smells like cheese.
It's time to make your membership official. Become an official member of the NAISH today at jointhenaish.com. That's jointhenaish.com, where you'll get access to exclusive podcasts and live streams you can't find anywhere else. See what everybody's talking about and join the NAISH today at jointhenaish.com.